This week on Buffy the Gilmore Slayer.
But Grandpa, we have to save the racetrack!
Hello and welcome to Buffy the Gilmore Slayer. I'm Brian Morris.
I'm Stacey Kulo, and we're both comedians.
And a couple.
And I just watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, one of Brian's favorite shows, for the very first time.
And I just watched Gilmore Girls, one of Stacey's favorite shows, for the very first time.
We watched both shows together, all 7 seasons, comparing them as we went.
And now we're watching and comparing 2 other shows from the creators of those 2 shows, Joss Whedon's Firefly
and Amy Sherman Palladino's Bunheads.
And this week we're discussing episode 4 of both shows, starting with Firefly, Shindig.
As well as Bunheads. Better luck next year. I don't know. These weren't the best.
Yeah, I mean, they were both kind of like whatever.
They weren't bad. Neither of them were like bad episodes, but I think we're taking a little break after introducing all the exciting stuff to just sit in some character relationship stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But again, not bad. I can't remember if we mentioned this last time, but someone did tell me that Bunheads is also available on Disney Plus in Australia. But someone also mentioned that they found a place to watch it for free.
Interesting.
Which is letflix.tv. It sounds shady and I can't personally recommend it. I haven't looked, but it doesn't, I don't know anything about letflix.tv. It sounds very fake.
If you get a VPN, you can also use one of those other streaming services like Disney Canada or whatever.
Yeah. Just letting you know, there's options.
Buffy is also airing on Comet in a bizarre order that I can't follow.
Yeah, so we just discovered that Buffy is coming on this channel we didn't know about called Comet, which is like sci-fi and fantasy, I guess. It comes on at like 1 and 2 in the morning. I fell asleep watching it one night, and then the next night it was the next episode, like an early season 5 episode. But then the next night we're like in season 2. The next episode right after that was like season 4. But then it like went back to season 5. I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on with Comet.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if they're just like each day is its own season. Like we're doing a Monday runs, Tuesday runs, but it's bizarre.
If you like watching Buffy roulette style, stay up till 1 a.m. and see what happens. Also, they had Firefly on last night. I think maybe on the weekends it's something else.
Or they're just very confused about the order of Buffy. It's like season 4 Buffy, then there's 2 Fireflies, and then...
It didn't keep it on long enough to see if it was an episode we'd seen. I didn't want any spoilers, but...
Right.
Oh, Brian, also, someone had pointed out that Summer Glau, who plays River in Firefly, is the ballerina in the ballet episode of Angel.
I don't remember if I noticed that at the time or not. I feel like maybe I probably didn't.
Which is an interesting connection, because now she's in Firefly, which we are pairing with Bunheads. Which is about ballerina.
Right, that's a very interesting connection.
Thank you. Oh, I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast either, but Yannick Truesdale, who plays Michelle in Gilmore Girls, is going to be in Amy Sherman Palladino's new ballet show. That's a big reveal.
Yeah.
You heard it here, maybe first, I don't know, when you get your news or how often you read Gilmore stuff.
But you may have gotten it here first.
This also comes out like... 2 weeks after we're recording it, but...
You could be listening to this in 5 years.
I hope so.
And you haven't watched the new Amy show, and you're like, oh, Michelle's on that? Interesting.
I hope the world's a crazy place, and you found this podcast 5 years from now, and Amy's new show is long done and canceled, but you still heard this here first. I don't hope all that. I hope everything's great.
Yeah, I hope her show goes on forever. It's just, it never ends. It's so good.
And that the world isn't bad. One quick announcement. You may have noticed that there are some additional episodes in our podcast feed. Our hosting service now allows us to have bonus content available for a subscription fee. So now, without joining Patreon, you can listen to our Veronica Mars recaps. I do still recommend Patreon over this option just because you get a lot more bang for your buck over on Patreon. That includes other bonus content, also access to the video version. This is just the audio pulled from the videos that we make. So you do lose a little bit of the visual at times because it is like actually us talking to the camera. So sometimes some stuff is lost in the audio only version. And we don't film them with these microphones. So it is just like audio from our camera and it doesn't quite sound as well produced as this. But for those of you that want to hear our take on Veronica Mars, I know a lot of you do, it is available. I think you just have to like click on one of those episodes and it'll take you to a subscription page and you can fill in your info.
Yeah, check it out. Maybe this is the best option for you, in which case, it's here.
Yeah. For the same price point on Patreon, you get access to like all the Angel content and stuff like that too. But maybe you don't want that. Maybe you just want this. So this is the best option for you. Maybe you hate videos. This is a great option for those of you that fit that category.
The category of hating videos.
And Angel. And Patreon. We have 1 5-star review. Most of the reviews come from Apple Podcasts, but we do occasionally get some on other websites that I don't check every time, but I checked in and we got one on Audible back in November. So thank you so much to Alistrian for your 5-star review.
Thank you so much.
Do you want to dive into these episodes?
Let's do it.
Let's wait for this emergency to stop. It's very musical.
So this week we started with Firefly. Stacey, please give us a quick summary of Shindig.
Okay. Shindig is about the crew of the Serenity going back to the planet Persephone. I think for like a break, essentially.
Yeah, they're also looking for jobs.
Yeah, but while they're there, they get a lead for a job. And Inara attends a ball with a client of hers. And Malcolm gets real jelly.
Yeah.
Kind of it. It's not a lot of space stuff. It's mostly ball stuff.
It's mostly ball stuff.
Ooh, is that a connection? In Bunheads, they talk about nards. This episode, they talk about balls. Okay. It starts actually with a slightly different intro. I think it's kind of similar text, but it's read by Malcolm. It used to be read by Shepard. It felt a little more loosey-goosey, too.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't love these intros. They seem tacked on and, like, rushed. They're just like trying to give you everything about the show so that if you've never seen the show, you understand what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're just tuning in, it's a lot to take in. So.
I mean, Buffy did something similar, right? It is sort of like, hey, here's the concept of the show. You kind of need to know all this before we jump in.
Yeah.
But it's still, I mean, Buffy's felt sloppy, I guess, in a sense. But it felt more like I'm reading you the lore, and you might not be familiar with the lore. But this is all like, here's my deal, everybody. I have a spaceship, and the future's fucked. What's going on? Like, okay, cool.
Yeah, he asks how you're doing at the end. It's weird.
How you doing? I hope you're doing good.
Nice to meet you. I'm Malcolm.
How's your ma?
So we open on Malcolm and maybe Jane playing pool with some other rough and tumble space guys at a space bar. I don't know where they are. They're not a Persephone yet. Inara's just there watching. She likes to watch them play pool. For some reason, the balls are like holograms. I don't know why this just can't be a real pool table. That seems less expensive than a computer one. Because the sticks are real.
Yeah.
I don't really understand what's happening, but the balls keep glitching. There's a sign that says not responsible for ball failure.
It's kind of funny. I guess we don't have to deep dive this, but I don't know how much pool tables suffer from like damage. Maybe like pool tables don't last that long in public places. I really don't know. And this would be like a way to solve that. But really, it just feels like they're like, hey, guys, it's the future. I just want to make that clear again. It's the future.
Yeah, I feel like then they should have just made the game a little different. An alien seeming.
Yeah.
I guess there aren't really aliens, though. Anywho's ways. Malcolm gets to talking to the guy he's playing pool with, who he finds out is like a slave trader, which he doesn't like. He ends up like pickpocketing him and like showing the money to Inara. And he doesn't feel bad because he doesn't like appreciate how this guy got his money. But she's kind of like, I don't know. It's still not cool to steal from someone. So they end up getting into a bar fight. None of that really mattered, I guess.
I mean, other than it shows that Malcolm sticks up for what he thinks is right, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's even sticking up for because he steals the thing from the guy. But
yeah. But this doesn't really have any like consequences for the rest of the episode as far as him fighting with these people.
Right.
So after the intro song, we find out that they are headed back to Persephone. Inara is like swiping left and right on her potential client Tinder that she has.
It's so funny because this show is kind of old at this point. But whenever you watch a show like this, it's just like her computer interface seems ancient. It's supposed to be futuristic. And it's like, this is going so slow, man.
She hones in on this guy named Athernon Wing. Thinks she's like hooked up with him before. He's like young and very excited to meet up with her. Malcolm comes in and sees her swiping left and right and gets very jelly.
Yeah.
he's all like, oh, you're gonna like meet up with someone when you're here? She's like, yeah, I'm gonna go to the ball with this guy. Like, it's his date. There's some big gala. I'm gonna like be his companion for the weekend. And he's just kind of like clearly jealous, like doesn't love that she's doing this. But like, who is he to tell her what to do?
Yeah, who is he to just barge into her fucking room, for one? Like, he just comes into her room all the time and is all like, you know you're a whore, right? It's dumb that you're a whore. Whores are whores. Like, he does, like, it's essentially what he's doing.
Yeah.
And it's like, the hell are you doing, dude?
Do they have a romantic history? Like,
I don't think...
never really said that.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's, like, clear that he would like her to just be his wife.
Without a doubt. And I feel like the jealousy, if I'm being real, is not written great. Like, it's just really over the top. Like, I want everyone to know in the audience that I'm jealous. And I don't know why she would put up with that.
Yeah, I mean, does she love him? If she did, you'd think she would be able to tell that he wants to be with her and she maybe would just not do this job. But also, like, this is her job. And I think it's almost like, is it a respected job? It almost feels like it is.
Yeah.
Like, it does seem like some people feel a certain way about it, but I almost feel like it's not like taboo like it is now.
Right, it's totally a respected job. She's the most respectful person on the ship. That's why they keep her there, other than it seems that Malcolm cares for her, is that she adds an air of respectability to the ship.
I am interested in why she's on the ship, though, because like we haven't seen her work anywhere else besides this planet. So like, why does she need to go? Maybe they just haven't shown that, but like...
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, they go to other planets and she can get clientele there. But I don't know that there really is an excuse for her to be on the ship, really.
Well, they go to the planet. This is the planet where they picked up all their passengers in the first place. But none of them actually get off the ship. Maybe they do when they first get there. I can't remember who all gets off. Except I know that Zoe and her husband, the pilot, Wash, get off. And Kaylee gets off. And they are outside like a brothel, I would guess.
I don't think it's a brothel. I think it is just like a place to buy clothes and the women are just modeling them. I don't think it's a brothel.
Okay. Yeah. It felt sort of like the red light district.
Yeah.
Where like women in the windows.
But they're not dressed sexy. They're dressed like in fancy clothes.
Yeah. So I guess that's just like how a store is. But Kaylee really likes these dresses. There's like one in particular that's like super ruffly. Feels like kind of like an old timey poofy dress. But I don't know. I don't know that this, because of like the bright colors, it's like orange and pink. I don't know that this would have been from that time exactly, but it's sort of that style. It feels a little gaudy, I guess, but I could, like, I feel like a little girl would find it pretty.
Yeah.
But she loves it, and everyone's like, that's great. I'm glad you love it, except Malcolm. He's like, where the fuck would you wear that? You work in the engineering room. What are you going to do? Be a fucking princess in the machine room? Basically.
Well, he says you'd be like a goat walking on her back legs.
Oh, yeah.
Which I feel like is a bit harsh, Malcolm. Like, I get that you're saying you're not that type of girl, but like, everyone's mad at him for saying that.
Yeah.
And I think this scene's pretty funny because everyone's mad at him and they all walk away pissed. But then Jane is like, she mad or something?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't get it. Like, what happened? He has no problem with what he said, what Malcolm said.
I think Jane is referencing Zoe because Zoe is like, we'll see you on the ship.
Right, right. But like, it's clear what she should be mad about.
Yeah, yeah. So Jane and Malcolm meet up with, I think his name is Badger?
Yeah.
Who's like this cockney British dude. He was from the first episode. The guy that was like spiralizing an apple peel with a little spiralizer. He wants Malcolm to do another job for him. Except like the guy who has cargo that he needs smuggled, he's not on good terms with. So he needs like Malcolm to like kind of make the deal himself. I don't know how Badger ends up getting money from this if he's not actually brokering the deal, right? That's what's happening.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think Badger probably gets a cut of it. I don't know how it works. I mean, he's probably going to get a finder's fee at the very least, I think.
It's interesting because if you watch this when it aired, you wouldn't have seen this guy before because he's not in the train pilot. He's only in the first pilot.
Right. I mean, you don't need to have seen him before because they announce everything that's happened.
So they take the deal. I think this is actually where Inara decides she's going to go to the dance with this guy. And then Mal decides he's going to go to the dance too, to find this guy and broker the deal. But he's going to try to patch things up with Kaylee. He gets her the dress with the money they're going to get for this deal and takes her as his date.
Couple things about this place. Badger could never get into this ball, I think is one of the big problems too. He mentions they have like this big weapon scanner and we do see it scan some guy who tries to come in with a handgun. That's really the end of that. So it's almost kind of like you didn't even need to say that because it doesn't affect anything else for the plot. I guess maybe it's why Mal doesn't have a gun when he's there.
Yeah.
I don't even know if he really is trying to patch things up with Kaylee or if he's really just like, this will help me.
Yeah, I need a date if I'm going to go to this thing.
But Kaylee's so happy to be here in the ugliest dress that used to be a piñata. It looks... It's funny because, like, I was telling you this, at some point in history, in human history, this probably was a dress that women found attractive, or men did, I don't know, you know. But it just, it looks god-awful, in my opinion. It looks like it's made of, like, a piñata or, like, you know those umbrellas you put in fancy drinks? It's like they took a ton of those. And
I mean, that's her vibe, though. Wasn't she,
wove
like,
them to dress?
Sitting out front of the ship with one of those umbrellas one time?
Like, that's true.
Okay. A human-sized.
Mm-hmm.
She likes colors. She feels like a bit of a little girl trapped in a young woman's body, right?
Hard to say. I mean, she's very tomboy on the ship itself.
Yeah.
Like, she dresses in overalls and stuff.
Sure. She's always in, like, flip-flop. I don't know. She feels, like, childlike.
Sure.
She's not hardened by that rough space life for some reason.
Right. But I don't see her as much of a girly girl. Maybe she fancies herself that a little bit. But, like, later in this episode, she's more of a tomboy and the guys love it.
Yeah. Well, she's very excited to be here. She is like, hey, I'm going to go be at the food table. I'm very excited about that. She grabs some strawberries. I think we've shown that they like strawberries in the past, right? Those are like rare.
Yeah.
In the very first episode, Shepherd had strawberries, which they were all very excited about.
And this makes sense in like this future where like people are colonizing planets and there's space travel. Like food probably, especially fresh food, is probably a commodity. Like there's probably not a ton of it.
Meanwhile, Malcolm is off to find the guy he's supposed to make the deal with. Back on the ship, Shepard, Simon, and Jane are, like, playing poker for chores, right? Like, they're...
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Different chores written on pieces of paper that they're trading, doing dishes and stuff.
Yeah, so if you win the chore, that means you don't have to do it.
Zoe and her husband are just banging. I mean, we see them post-bang. They're all banged up.
Yep, all banged up.
But it seemed like it was wonderful.
Yeah.
I guess they do love each other and find each other sexy. Just because that was a little unclear to me in the last episode. Because
yeah.
She was saying they like to keep the relationship private. And then he was like, my wife's so hot. So I was like, okay, they either have two different stories here or they're just two different people.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem to be very in love in this episode. I still don't like buy them as a couple. This is like the first time we've seen them really have chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I like that we have like a stable couple on the show. Again, we just like don't get that much screen time alone with either of these two. I just don't really know them as people yet, especially the pilot. He is sort of like goofier in this episode, but I don't know. I feel like we get a lot more like intrigue on many of the other characters.
Yeah, I agree.
Back at the dance, Kaylee introduces herself to some mean girls.
Yeah, like literally like mean girls.
And they're all like, you're going to have to talk to your dressmaker because she made you a dress that looks like it came from a store.
Kaylee feels all bad. Then some old dude shows up and he's all like, you bitches are bitches, more or less.
Yeah, he just kind of slut shames this girl. He's like,
yeah.
You're just as great. I hear it's not hard for young gentlemen to get you out of it.
First off, he's like, it looks like a bunch of slaves spent forever to get you in that, which he kind of like smiles at, I guess, which is like saying like, yeah, I have a lot of slaves and it's a fancy dress.
Oh, yeah.
Which is still like, you're excited about your slaves? That's fucking weird, man. And then he's like, yeah, it takes like a boy's wink to get it off.
Yeah. I thought this was maybe the dude that Malcolm was looking for. Because
yeah,
he had said he was like an older guy. And then Malcolm ends up finding someone else. I was like, no, it's probably the other guy. But Malcolm does find the right guy. But Kaylee just ends up collecting a group of older gentlemen and just like chatting it up with them about engineering and stuff. So She has a great time.
Yeah, she's just talking about like engines and stuff. And they're all like, oh my God, a woman that could talk about something. I'm so enamored.
But Malcolm ends up finding Inara. He dances with her, even though her date is like, I don't know about that. And eventually, he, like, takes Inara back. He's like, I'll be taking her. I paid for her. She's mine. She's property and not a woman.
Yeah, it's messed up. He sucks a lot. But, like, there's a couple times she's like, come with me. And she, like, lingers. And it's like, well, he did pay you a ton of money to be his companion. So I feel like you do have to go.
What is it specifically that sets Malcolm off? Because Malcolm ends up throwing a punch at this guy when he takes it a little too far.
Well, Malcolm shows up at this dance. And Inara comes over and talks about her date. Malcolm immediately is like a douche to Atherton because obviously he's jealous. He's like, can I call you Ath? Which I thought was funny. He's like, do you care if I have a dance with Inara? I feel like Atherton like sort of has to acquiesce because it's like a polite party, but he clearly is not excited about this. They dance and the dance is nice. Like they clearly have chemistry when it comes to dancing and they're just kind of talking about their jobs. he's saying that he doesn't like her job. She's all like, yeah, your job's just illegal. I don't know how you pretend your job's better. My job's like literally legal. Yours isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like, yeah, but my job's about honesty. Your job's not, which I think is also bullshit because you stole from a guy. Like, you're not honest, Malcolm. Don't pretend you are.
Right. He's trying to say hers isn't honest because she doesn't like actually like these men. She's like faking it to get money.
But I mean, they know that, though. You know what I mean? Like, I would never, ever think a prostitute loved me. I would be like, you are in this for the money.
Right.
I assume. I've never been with a prostitute. Maybe they're very charming. But then Atherton comes over and, like, kind of grabs her and is like, we're, like, leaving. And Malcolm doesn't take kindly to her being grabbed. And then the dad's like, she's my property. I own her.
I think he says something specifically that, like, makes her kind of feel, well, I didn't love that you said it that way. I can't remember what it was, though.
But it was pretty much like, I own you. She's a prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
And then Malcolm punches him in the face. I'm immediately surprised he's not, like, thrown out. But I guess this can be something that happens, because then Atherton gets up and is like, I accept your challenge. And Malcolm punching him apparently was how one challenges someone else to a duel in this society. Malcolm's like, cool, you want to fight? I'm down. Because Malcolm's a good fighter. He's like, let's do it. And he's like, cool, but it'll be tomorrow and it'll be with swords. And I thought it was kind of funny. Malcolm's like, so what?
We should set up a couple things that happened in the meantime before all of this. Before Malcolm even gets there, I think this dude, Atherton, has asked Inara to be his permanent companion. I don't know what that entails exactly. Later they mentioned that would make her a slave. So, like, I guess that means she gives up her business. And he just, does he pay her? Unclear.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, I mean, she would, I guess, get to live this kind of lifestyle.
Yeah.
Would she be his wife? Like, could he still sleep with other people? I'd want to know the details of this before agreeing. But she doesn't say no. But he points out she also doesn't say yes. She definitely doesn't actually want to do it, but she's considering it. Another thing that has happened before the fight is Malcolm has found the dude he's supposed to make a deal with. He's not that old.
No.
I don't remember his name, but I'm going to call him Sash because he's wearing a big red sash. And he's kind of like...
His name is Haro, I think.
Mm. So Sash...
Well, call him Sash. You know, Sash. Right.
He's not coming back. Sash is like, I don't know if I do deals with people like you. I might not be the man you're looking for. Eventually, he makes it clear he is the dude.
Yeah.
So once the duel is set, he like quickly offers to be Malcolm's second, which means if Malcolm bails, he has to fight. I don't know why he would want to put himself in that position.
To be fair, Haro doesn't like Atherton. It's clear he like thinks
That's
Atherton sucks.
True. So maybe he would just love to kill him if he got the chance.
Yeah, it seems that way.
So everyone's a little worried because Malcolm doesn't really know how to sword fight.
Back at the ship, Badger shows up and he's all like, hey, Malcolm got not put in prison, but like put in holding because he's going to do this duel tomorrow. And I'm going to stay here to make sure you guys don't like take off because we have a deal and I want to make sure this goes through. Jane's all like, yeah, maybe I'll kill you. Why would I not? Like, why would we stay? But then a bunch of his henchmen show up, Badger's henchmen show up holding Haley hostage. And so they're like, we're going to sit here and wait.
Did you say Haley?
I did. I meant Kaylee.
It was Kaylee.
Joel Osment was there.
Yeah. He was one of the other hostages. But he didn't have any lines. You really got to look.
And they're like, he's not one of our crew member. But we're still keeping him hostage.
So they're held hostage. They're like, we should create a diversion and just like run past Badger and go figure out how to get Malcolm and Inara back here. But as they're sort of coming up with ideas, they notice that River is just sort of wandering around, touching stuff nearby. And they kind of give Simon a look like, hey, maybe go make sure your sister isn't a weirdo around Badger.
Yeah, and she had already had like a freak out earlier where she really didn't like the fact that some cans of food had labels on them.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that. When they were playing poker, she just sort of casually started ripping all the labels off of cans.
Mm-hmm.
And Shepard's like, it's okay. We'll just have some mystery meals later. I was like, well, the labels are around still. You could kind of have a pretty good idea of what's in those cans.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't eat the labels. But Badger goes over and tries to talk to River. And she just starts like talking to him kind of normal in like a Cockney accent, I believe is the accent he has.
She picks up the accent he has. I think she's pretending she's from the same place he's from.
Uh-huh.
And but then like kind of talks down to him. But it's clear, like, very, like, genius spy stuff, out of, like, with very little information, like, suddenly switches on.
Which makes me think they were training her to be some kind of spy or good in these situations. We don't address that in this episode, but everyone's kind of like, okay, I guess that's the thing she can do.
Mm-hmm.
But Badger even is like, oh, it's so nice to talk to someone from the homeland.
I wonder if like Summer was really just like getting ready for an improv scene, and she's like, I've got this character I've been working on. I'm so excited. I hear a similar voice. I'm gonna go try my character out.
Meanwhile, Inara, I guess, is training Mal how to sword fight.
Yeah, she shows up. She's all like, Atherton's a light sleeper, so I could sneak out.
Probably a heavy sleeper.
Yeah, sorry. Heavy sleeper.
We're done with the sex. We did have sex because I'm his paid nighttime companion. She didn't say that, but she does mention early in the episode that he has a lot of stamina.
Yeah, well, she says that because Mal's all like, oh, I bet he's got a bunch of stamina. She's like, yeah, he does.
Which he wasn't hoping to hear that was true.
Yeah.
But yeah, she just kind of goes to talk to Malcolm, and he's practicing sword fighting, and he's not good at it.
Not well.
She helps him.
Yeah. She helps him, but really, her helping him really points out how bad he is at it. And then he, like, also insults her again pretty bad. He calls her a whore and says she goes to, like, she's like, you learned this in horror school? And she's like, what are you doing? Like, you keep insulting my job, and, like, you're supposedly defending my honor. And he's all like, well, I just don't like your job. I'm not insulting you. But it's like, dude, you fucking are. Like, you gotta chill. Like, you're too much. Like, you were literally, she points out that he does crime, and it's, like, hypocritical for him to be, like, poo-pooing her job. And I have to agree with her 100%.
Yeah. It's the only way he knows how to flirt with her is negging, and it's not her love language.
Yeah. He's probably trying to shake off the character from Buffy. It's still got a little bit of that in there. He's like, get some of this Caleb out.
I think that's actually after this.
You might be right. She's been prepping for Caleb for so long.
He's doing both at once, probably, like Josh was. He can't differentiate.
Right, totally.
So, it's duel day.
That's when it's Saturday and Sunday. Oh, duel, like fight day. Oh, okay.
The duel is in like a little meadow by a river or something. I don't know. It's like a little outdoor area. And they start fighting. Mal thinks he's doing well right away, but the guy's just, you know, not really going all in yet. And then Malcolm starts failing pretty hard immediately. He's falling for all kinds of tricks. He gets stabbed a couple times. Dude eventually just like steps on his sword and breaks it. And Inara finally is like, just please don't kill him. I will stay and be your permanent companion. Just don't kill him. But then, what is the switch? How does Malcolm get the upper hand?
Well, the guy gets distracted then. Well, what's interesting is that Jane, when they are on the ship, Jane keeps saying that they need a distraction to get out of this predicament
they're in.
While Malcolm is like losing this fight, like you said, Inara's like, I'll stay with you. Just don't kill him. And the guy looks over at her kind of like, oh, really? And that's the distraction Malcolm needs to beat him. And then he fights pretty dirty, like throws the like broken sword at him.
I was gonna say, how does he win without a weapon? He just uses the broken weapon?
Yeah, and then he uses the handle, kind of like brass knuckles, and punches him in the face with it, which would hurt / could kill you. And then he stabs the guy, and he's like, I'm gonna let you live. Then this part's a little weird, because Sash comes over, you know, Hero Sash, and he's all like, you've got to kill him. You've got to do it, Malcolm. And Malcolm's all like, I'm not going to kill him. I'm going to humiliate him by not killing him. Then Sash is like, okay, I guess you don't have to kill him.
Well, this was also kind of funny because he's like, mercy is the mark of a great man. And then he like stabs him a little bit. He's like, guess I'm just a good man. And then he stabs him again. He's like, I'm all right.
I'm all right.
But yeah, he's just kind of poking him a little bit. But yeah, you're right. Sash is just like, I respect that you didn't kill him, even though a moment ago it was the only way.
I literally told you you had to do it.
Let's do business. I'm Sash.
This dude who just got humiliated and stabbed several times, his like little manservant is like tending to his wounds, and he yells at Inara. He's like, you're never going to be able to work on this planet again. Now make sure no one sleeps with you. Which, number one, dude, like, it seemed like everyone on this planet wanted to bang her. You said as much. So I doubt everyone's be like, no, I won't. I bet they still will.
I don't know. If they tap into the Mean Girl Network.
Yeah, those Mean Girls are pretty easy to get, I guess.
Well, I meant like they'll spread word to not sleep. Sure.
So then she's like, oh, actually, it's the opposite. I'm going to put you down as blacklisted in the companion network. And literally no women in the companion network will see you anymore. And then Sash is all like, ho, 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 ho. I guess you'll have to win women with your personality now. Kind of like a, you suck so much. No chance women will love you. But I don't.
He hates this guy.
Yeah.
He just works with Malcolm because they both hate this guy, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I think Malcolm not killing him was sort of like, you're a trustworthy guy.
Sure, even though he wanted the opposite.
Yeah.
So, they're back on the ship. They're still trapped by Badger. They're about to do the diversion when the captain comes back. We see Kaylee going down into her little hole where she lives below engineering. She sleeps with the machines, but she still has her dress And she starts playing music, like what was playing at the ball.
And eating some candy that she probably stole from the ball.
Yeah. And then upstairs, we see Inara and the captain sharing some wine that Kaylee made. And I guess they sort of just patch things up. She's like, why would I ever want to leave Serenity? And I don't know, because there's no clients aboard. You could go anywhere. Would be a reason, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then we pan out and see that the cargo that they're smuggling is a bunch of cows.
Yeah. I feel like she's implying that, like, she wants to stay for him.
Yes, yes, maybe. Yes.
But, like, he treats her like garbage, so I kind of don't know why.
Well, they have all those unlabeled cans of food.
It's kind of funny, too, because he's all, like, he keeps showing his wound to her. She doesn't want to see.
Oh, yeah. He's like, because I got stabbed. That was funny.
So, did you like this episode?
It wasn't bad, but it wasn't an amazing one.
Mm-hmm.
I think all the others have been better. The train heist was like more of an interesting thing of the week, as was last week's sort of like whodunit horror episode.
Mm-hmm.
Where this was just sort of, I don't know, it explored the relationship between Malcolm and Inara, but that's kind of it.
It would have been nice for Malcolm to have had a conversation with someone else, like Walsh, for instance, or Zoe, where they kind of talk about, you know, how his behavior kind of sucks and, like, maybe give us some reasons for the behavior.
Yeah.
Because he sort of, like, at the end, like, I'm doing quotes right now, like, learns a lesson. He's like, I should have stayed out of your world. But it's like, you know, someone needs to tell him, besides Inara, that, like, you're acting like a total douchebag, like a hypocrite, too.
I guess we also learned a little bit about River, which is interesting, but I'm curious to get more into that soon. I don't know if they're going to, like, draw that out the whole season / series, or if that's something
we'll
figure out sooner than later.
I don't know when we, like, really dive into that. We will, though. It all gets explained, but I don't know when that happens.
Yeah, because I feel like I could see if this was something they intended to go on for multiple seasons, not revealing that until towards the end, and then maybe we just never really do much with that until the movie.
Right. I mean, the movie does the lion's share of explaining all of it, because there's a lot, but I want to say we get into more of it in the show.
But yeah, like, the thing of the week itself wasn't that interesting, and Malcolm's behavior was just kind of like, come on, dude, do you want this woman or not?
Right.
But it was fun to see them in fancy clothes. Did you like it?
I thought it was fine. I don't know. Like, Malcolm's was kind of annoying in this one, but it was fun enough. I didn't dislike it.
Yeah. Again, there's nothing to really dislike. It just wasn't that remarkable. I was excited for it because of the thumbnail and the title. I was like, oh, they're all going to be at a fancy party. But yeah, it was fine. Just not my favorite.
Sure. Honestly, I feel like Firefly is pretty good. Like, it's not nearly as funny as Buffy is or Gilmore Girls was. But I feel like it's fairly solid episode to episode, even though I do find flaws in it. I still find it enjoyable to watch.
I think if this was someone's first episode, it wouldn't grab you.
Sure, for sure. Yeah.
Because the other characters don't have that much to do. And the characters we're focusing on, it wasn't that interesting of a story.
Mm-hmm.
Or that, like, exciting of a plot.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, I'm still enjoying Firefly.
But it was a nice change, I think, from the previous ones where, like, space cowboys doing space crime. Like, it was that, but it was like, but what it's changed up, and it's like a fancy thing. It's, you know, it's some intrigue and lying that's not just, like, hiding from guards with guns, you know?
Yeah, totally. Okay, well, should we move on?
Let's do.
And now for a special segment we like to call
Movies One of Us Has Never Seen.
As you know, we used to do a portion of the podcast where we talked about the show Charmed, a WB show, airing around the same time as Buffy and Gilmore Girls that neither of us had ever seen.
But now, we're taking turns making our partner explain what they think happened in a movie that they have never seen, based only on the title and very little other information.
This week, I have chosen a movie that I think Stacy has not seen. Stacy, have you seen the movie Carnosaur?
No, have you?
Yeah. I've seen Carnosaur 1, 2, and 3.
1, 2.
1, 2, and 3.
And 3.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know the whole plot.
No, I have not seen Carnosaur 1, 2, or 3.
Okay, so Stacey has not seen it. She can now ask me 3 questions about the movie if she wants, and then she's going to go through the plot of the movie.
Brian, why is this a real movie? That's not one of the questions.
Why?
Okay, I don't want this to be one of my questions. Can you just spell the name of the movie for me so I can confirm what letter it starts with?
C-A-R-N-O-S-A-U-R. S-A-U-R.
Okay, so we're doing car dinosaurs. I just wanted to make sure that we're on the same page phonetically.
What else would it be? Like a Q or a K?
Maybe that's some kind of dinosaur I haven't heard of. Okay, what year is this from?
1993.
Jurassic Park-ish. Who's the most famous actor in it?
Okay. Let me look that up.
Apparent, just from your memory?
Hold on. I want to see if what the fuck any of these people have ever fucking been in, man. Okay. The most famous actor in this movie probably is Clint Howard.
Oh, is that Ron Howard's brother?
Yes. However, no, there are some other actors in it, and maybe I just haven't heard of them. Okay, so one of them is Diane Ladd.
No.
She was in Chinatown, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, Wild at Heart, and Joy. The other main character guy is Raphael Sabarge.
Nope.
He was in Risky Business.
Haven't seen.
And he was in The Exorcist Believer. So, I mean, this guy's been in movies.
Okay. Do the carnosaurs speak?
Okay, first off, it's called Carnosaur. And you're asking if the carnosaurs speak. I don't believe the carnosaurs speak at all.
I have so many more questions, but I'm out of them. I'm out. Okay, so, fuck. Can I take back the question about the actors? Because that didn't matter at all. Okay.
I'll give you a hint as well. Okay, we recently watched something that inspired me to give you this.
But I can't know what that thing is?
No.
Okay. Well, I'll keep that in mind as I tell you what this movie's about.
Yeah, of course.
It's about a failing small-town racetrack where the families aren't turning out on Saturday night to watch the local race car drivers anymore. And
did you see Carnosaur?
No.
Okay.
Am I correct so far? So the son of the racetrack owner is just out in the junkyard one day kicking around stuff when he kicks an old front part of a car and it goes. It's a car that's part dinosaur. He's like, "What? What is this?" And he starts tinkering with it. He's like, Dad, get out of here. What is this?" He's like, "Oh, son, that's the old Carnosaur. It doesn't run." So the kid sneaks out every night with his grandpa, because grandpa overheard this. He's like, "I bet the Carnosaur would run if I just greased it up with my grandson." So they do. Him and grandpa sneak out every night. They grease up the Carnosaur, and they get it running. And it is a beast. Like, it drives fast. It wins all the races. But it's also, it just, like, gobbles up other cars. Like,
oh, shit. It eats other cars?
Yeah, but in like a fun way where like, yeah, this used to be a racetrack thing. Now it's like a monster truck thing. But then it does start to be a problem because it does start eating people and it gets bad and they have to like put down the Carnosaur. Do you have any other questions for me? Like, am I missing any plot points?
Okay, so it's a car.
Oh, and there's a mom and she's like, "Don't you guys be messing with that Carnosaur."
That's part dinosaur?
Yeah.
Okay, so can you, I mean, How do you think the movie explains
that? It was a car that, it was a very good car, like a muscle car. Like, it was everyone's favorite car, but it stopped running. And it just got forgotten and put out in the junkyard. But it was on a fossil of a T-Rex. So when it started to
what does that mean?
The car, when it went to the junkyard, underneath in the ground was a bunch of dinosaur bones.
Got it.
So as the car decayed, it sort of fused with the earth where the bones were, and it got the essence of the dinos in it, right?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So then it became sentient?
No, because it doesn't talk, but it kind of has a mind of its own. Like, they try to control it, they try to drive it, and at first it's really good for business, and people come back to the racetrack, but eventually it starts hurting cars and people, and they have to put it down, and like it becomes like a action horror movie where they had to figure out how to kill this dino carosaur, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? Any other questions?
I mean, that's eerie how well you got that.
But then the racetrack is still popular because everybody's curious about the murders. Am I close?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, dead on, really.
I don't believe you.
Oh, I wouldn't either.
I bet I got some things right.
No. Just about nothing.
That's a hard one, guys.
It is a hard one. It is a hard one.
I gave you Annie, a beloved tale.
This is a beloved tale. Do you want me to explain what the beloved tale is about?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a beloved tale about a brilliant scientist whose plans to expose a lethal virus to every human being on the planet. Her objective, to destroy humankind in... Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Back in 1993? Can you believe this shit?
But she's not a famous actor.
No, she's not a famous... Well, it's Diane Ladd, whoever that is. Okay. Her objective, to destroy humankind in favor of her new strain of prehistoric dinosaurs. Two people stand in the way of her diabolical plan, a cynical night watchman and a lovely, idealistic environmentalist. The two must overcome their differences long enough to uncover the scientist's scheme and fight her carnivorous creatures in a desperate battle against the extinction of the human race.
I have two questions immediately.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Why does she want to destroy the world?
I don't remember. I think she just hates the world. But I do remember you have to understand, her plan is so insane. She is like cloning chickens and somehow is able to like clone dinosaurs. And she gives a town a bunch of eggs that are infected with some kind of virus.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the women just get sick and get pregnant with dinosaurs who like eat their way out the women when they've come to term.
They're just full dinosaurs.
They're full ass dinosaurs.
The other question I have is where does car come into play?
Are you not familiar with the word carnivore?
You see why I did what I did though, right?
No, I don't. You're like, car with a C, got it. I'm like, yeah, but carnivore starts with a C.
What is it called? Carnosaur?
Yeah, like dinosaur, but carnivore put together.
Hmm.
When you're like, it's a dinosaur car, I'm like, okay. Okay, sure.
I guess it could have been carnival dinosaurs, too.
Yeah, it could have been either. So the women all get sick, including the scientist. Good. She knows this is going to happen. She gives birth to a little dinosaur that kills her. From what I understand, I mean, the human race might be fucked at the
end of the movie. Does childbirth automatically kill you, or could you, like, have your dinosaur and raise it in a loving home and it would be fine?
You could do that, but they come out alien kind of ways. Like, they're like, hey, let's do it in a C-section from the inside.
And 2 and 3 are more of this?
2 and 3 are less about the world ending and more like, there's scientists cloning dinosaurs, and what if we did the movie Aliens, but with dinosaurs? Carnosaur 1 ends with a fight between a giant T-Rex and a man in a backhoe or like a crane type thing, a construction site vehicle. That's very much like, oh, someone saw Aliens and was like, what if we did that with a T-Rex at the end? That's essentially the end of Aliens, but with a T-Rex.
So let us know if you'd rather watch my Carnosaur or Brian's Carnosaur. I think mine sounds more wholesome and fun.
There's the sequel, and one of the main actor, I guess, in the sequel has, like, said, like, yeah, I was drunk for most of it.
Drunk or drugged? So,
intoxicated is what he says.
So it could be either.
Yeah. Has anyone else seen Carnosaur or Carnosaur 2 or 3? Let me know.
Yeah. I bet it was very popular.
This is apparently also based on a book, which is like, what? Okay.
All right. Well, I was close. So that's it.
Yeah. Dead on. Yeah. It was a lot like Annie. I wanted to pick something similar to Annie.
Is there songs?
Yeah. I was like drinking when I started laughing. That was rough.
Mm-hmm. I heard it.
I'm going to sneeze because I got soda in my nose. It's gone now. This has been Movies One of Us Has Never Seen.
Then we watched Bunheads. Brian, give us a quick summary of Better Luck Next Year.
This episode is about the Joffrey School of Ballet holding their audition and Fanny trying to get her studio prepared for the audition. That's mainly the plot of this one.
Yeah, and the girls preparing, I guess.
Yes, yeah.
Specifically Boo.
The episode starts with Michelle receiving a ton of furniture. Her landlord sent all of her furniture to her, including all of the furniture that was in the place before she moved in. So she's got like a ton of stuff. She's got nowhere to put that she doesn't want.
And possessions, like boxes of items too.
Right. And she's complaining. It's a running bit where she's trying to like get the guys not to unload it or take it back, and they won't. She's got nowhere to put it. So she's upset about it. It's kind of funny. But then she goes to Fanny and tells her, like, she wants to see if there's any extra space for her to use. And Fanny's, like, so mean to her. She's like, no, that stuff's got to go, like, right now. It's got to go bye-bye. Make it go bye-bye. There's no space for it. Get rid of it. She's, of course, upset because the Joffrey School's coming and she wants everything to be like tip-top perfect and she doesn't want any of this there. But she's like so sure and non-understanding to Michelle, like, this has got to go right now. Like, no excuses. Like, don't. She's like, I tuned you out while you were talking. And I'm like, Fanny, you don't own any of this land. So maybe you should be a little bit more accommodating to the woman who could literally throw you out on the street. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's a bit like, I get being like, hey, it's coming. Could you move this? It's important to me. But she's so dismissive of Michelle's concerns or plight. You know, she could offer like, hey, you could call this guy. He could take it away. She's just like, get rid of it. Get rid of it. It's like, this is her land now. She owns the house you live in. She could just go put this shit in your bedroom.
I need like a map of the property to understand like where Michelle is living in relationship to the dance studio and like how close these things are. Yeah, but you made a good point. She could just put some of this stuff in Hubble's room. It's like a big old room.
I thought that too.
Unless Fanny's moved into that room.
Yeah, which could be the case. But it just seems so weird that Fanny was so like, I get that they have like some tension between them, you know, but still, it's like she's letting you live there. Just shut up and help her out. But Fanny's focused on getting ready for this Joffrey thing. There's also a funny line here I like where Fanny's like, you know, make it disappear like David Copperfield. You know how David Copperfield made the Statue of Liberty disappear? Do it like that. And then Fanny leaves and Michelle's like, no, I don't know how to do that because David Copperfield was like a professional and he would never tell anyone how to do magic tricks. I thought that was all very funny. Then we get a quick scene of Boo at the farmer's market. Her mother wants to get a bunch of unhealthy food, which I get. When you're at the farmer's market, you always want that like cheesy ass bread, you know, that they just cooked. It's like $12 for almost nothing, but it's just so goddamn good. Her mom wants all that kind of stuff, or like chocolate she finds, or kettle corn. And Boo's trying to lose weight and be healthy specifically because of the Joffrey audition. So she's like, no, no, mom, we're getting turnips. But you pointed out that like, she's sort of just seeing stuff like, ooh, I'll get kale. But it's like, you have to go to the farmer's market with an idea of what you need, unless you're a chef, because it's going to go bad if you just like get a bunch of vegetables and stuff.
You kind of have to have a plan when you're cooking for two people when you're getting like this many vegetables.
And it's clear her mom doesn't know how to cook or cook healthy stuff. She set that up in the previous episode. I do think that their relationship is nice. It's clearly a very loving relationship. And the mother wants to eat unhealthy, but is like trying to be there for her daughter.
Yeah.
And support her daughter, which I like.
We learn in the scene that the auditions are coming up in a week. And also that Boo didn't make it last year.
Right. And her mother bought her like a really big cake that said like, better luck next year. And they ate it together. And it was like a nice bonding moment for the two of them, even though it was sad for Boo. Meanwhile, Michelle has moved all of her stuff into her tiny little guest house. And she's trying to cook food. And her apartment is just a total wreck. Like, just a dump. She says that the refrigerator's hot. She like almost burns her hand inside. And then she tries to turn on the stove and it doesn't turn on, and then just gas starts leaking from it. So she has to like scramble over her stuff to leave and just starts asking for help for anyone outside. Yeah.
And then she ends up sleeping with all the doors and windows open.
And that night, Fanny shows up and like, why are all the windows and stuff open? She shows up like literally in the middle of the night, wakes Michelle up, doesn't seem to think what she's doing is rude at all. She's like, I'm old. I only need 2-3 hours of sleep and I love doing stuff at night. Why is everything open? This is all funny, too, actually. Michelle's all like, your guy helped me. The guy with the beard that was outside. He said it looked like I needed help, and he came and helped me. And Fanny's like, what guy are you talking about? She's like, you know, the nice-looking guy with the beard. She's like, I don't have a guy. That was just some stranger. It's probably a killer. And Michelle's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, all of her doors and windows are open.
Yeah.
It is weird that Fanny just comes over. Like, did she come over with, like, a question or something?
I think she came over because the windows and shit were open.
Yeah. So it must be kind of close to the other house, if she could just, like, see that.
But it's just insane that she walks in, and the show does sort of play it up like Fanny's being a little unreasonable.
Yeah.
Because Michelle keeps pointing out, like, you woke me up in the middle of the night, like, I should be sleeping. But no, this is another, like, what are you guys talking about? Like, what? Fanny, get the hell out. This is not your property anymore. Well, it never was.
And then she just starts, like, unpacking Michelle's stuff, and Michelle's like, don't do that. And she's like, oh, I know I don't have to. She's like, no, I don't want you to. I don't want you to.
She keeps doing it and like insulting her shit. A connection to her and Malcolm. Just like walking into her place and insulting stuff about her.
Yeah.
Fanny, though, also says that she like just loves working at night because no one's around talking and she doesn't have to hear anybody. But then later in that same scene, she's like, it's nice to have someone to talk to at night. She's like, okay, whatever, Fanny. Cut to the next day. Michelle wakes up and it's just like, walking around her house in her underwear, like eating chips and having a soda. And then she looks out the window and there's just a bunch of like wide-eyed ballet kids out there like, what the hell? It's kind of funny because the music stops when she sees them and just freezes. And then she slowly starts walking backwards and the music picks up again slowly. So then she needs drapes and she is incapable of using a tension rod, which made me want to slap her, because tension rods are not difficult to understand.
To be fair, it's very long. I do feel like you'd probably need someone to help you put up this particular one. Maybe not need, but it would make it much easier. She had like a very cheap, long one.
Yeah, I agree. But she keeps going to the instructions. She's upset they're not in English, but it's like, there's nothing to read there.
This is like silly comedy. I feel like any intelligent human would understand how this kind of works.
Righty tighty, lefty loosey, the end. I mean, they go out of their way to show that she doesn't even know what a Phillips head screwdriver is, which, I mean, don't all adults know that, I feel like?
You'd think.
I don't know. It just seems like something everyone at some point understands. But I guess they've made it clear she's not a handyman at all.
Yeah, I mean, that felt like an obvious joke coming to me that she wasn't going to know the screwdriver. We should also mention that in here, Sasha and the students go to the ballet class, and Sasha is, like, trying to connect with Boo. She, like, mentions that they saw Michelle in her underwear. But yeah. Boo's just kind of ignoring her. I don't know if she's upset at her about something or if she's just very focused. But it seems like Sasha is, like, trying to win Boo as a friend.
Well, she also, in the previous episode, had, like, lashed out at Boo. So I think that's why Boo's like, yeah, I don't need to talk to you.
Yeah.
We also have a fun scene. This is my favorite scene in the episode, probably, where Fanny is talking to Rico and Truly, and they're planning food for the Joffrey visit. And Rico, who's played by the same guy who played my Mitchum, is just so funny and different than Mitchum. It's like, so it's crazy to watch him. This is like total stoner loser guy. But he was also pretty funny. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, I don't know why I'm hungover, man. Like, it sounds like I'm doing an exaggeration, but I'm not. He's just like, I don't know, man. I didn't drink last night, and I don't eat candy and have sugar. Oh, you know what? I did drink last night, and I did have a candy bar. But then his, like, dumbass wife, he's dumb too. It's not that she's dumb. They're just both dumbasses. His dumbass wife shows up, and she's all like, wait, the restaurant's still open? Like, you work there. You own this place. And then he's like, yeah, man, and now we're open 7 days a week. She's like, we're open 7 days a week? What? Like, she doesn't even know what days they're open.
Yeah, they're like, whose idea was that? I'm like, I don't know, one of us at some point.
But they're doing this catering to save a little extra money. But it's also funny because Fanny's asking for some specifics, like cutting the crust off bread. He's like, I don't want to do that. She's like, well, if you don't want to do it, I'll take my business elsewhere. And he's like, okay, that's fine. I love that response. Like, oh, that's fine with me. I don't give a shit. I'm not a caterer, man.
Also, Truly is just being the liaison between him and Fanny, I guess. She's just helping Fanny. They don't really say why she's there. I'm glad she's back, though. She's funny and her character's interesting.
But all of that was very funny to me. Fanny gets called away because Joffrey has sent a fax. So she's got to go check it. So she does in her house. Because I guess she has a fax machine in there because she's ancient. She's a carnosaur. And Michelle comes in like, hey, I need to use your kitchen. And also, I need to get some blinds. Do you know anyone that can help me?
Also, her toilet is on a timer, perhaps.
Her toilet that's what she comes in about.
It doesn't flush at 11:30.
Yeah. So she comes in complaining about that. And then Fanny's upset that Joffrey's school of dancing or ballet has like betrayed her. Because they're not going to come. They're going to go to some other town instead.
They've Game of Thrones her was the specific language.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk about. So she says they Game of Thrones her and Truly's all like, yeah, they cut her head off. They Ned Starked her. And the whole time I'm like, guys, the name of the fucking school is Joffrey. No one's going to make a reference to the fact that the school is named Joffrey and you're referencing the show with Joffrey in it.
Do they make a Joffrey reference? I feel like they kind of describe...
They do. They said they Ned Starked him, and they make a small reference to like the king, but it's like, but we should be making a very direct reference to Joffrey. I guess maybe it was oblique enough. That's what they're going for, but I felt like it should have been clearer.
Yeah, like Michelle saying, like, well, it's in the name.
Exactly. Like, what did you expect from a Joffrey?
Michelle reads the facts, and it's not like obvious from the facts that they are moving it, though. They do end up moving it, but I don't know that that is like in this fact. They're just like, how's your wood floor?
Essentially, it's like, hey, we just want to check on the wood floor before we finalize. Essentially, they want the floor fixed because it wasn't perfect last time before they finalize. And Fanny knows
she's not going to fix it.
So she's like, they canceled. So because Fanny can't fix this floor for some reason, Joffrey is going to be moving it, eventually we find out, to Ojai, which is some other like town 30 minutes away. We should say there's a quick scene, too, where Boo's at home grabbing a snack of broccoli. Good for her. And she finds a cake that her mother bought that says, better luck next year. She obviously bought this for her daughter. Now, for a moment, I thought this was, like, the day before the audition. That's not the case. It's still a couple days away. So I'm like, this mother bought a cake like multiple days in advance? That's pretty dumb.
It's also such a huge cake for two people.
Yeah, agreed. And it's fine if you buy it a day, even 2 days before, but it's like 4 or 5 days before this thing.
Yeah, it's not like a fancy cake. Like, you could have quickly gotten this like at a store the day of. It's like a weird choice to make so many days in advance about your daughter.
This looked like a cheap ass cake. Honestly, like, you could make this in a day at home.
It made me sad because, like, the mom doesn't believe in her and they have such a good relationship.
Yeah. I mean, and it makes Boo sad. That's the point, right? That her mom doesn't believe in her. It's hard, though. It's hard to say because it seems like getting into Joffrey is very hard and Boo just doesn't have the typical ballet body.
Yeah.
So it's not crazy to me that the mother might suspect that she won't get into it, but it's I don't know, buying that cake so far in advance.
It's not even that hidden, really.
No, not at all.
Takes up the whole fridge.
Things aren't going well for Boo. Also, her shoe breaks, and she's like, my mom's not going to buy me a shoe for this audition that she doesn't even think I'm going to do well in. My thoughts, though, were like, yeah, but you still need that shoe to do ballet, and your mom
right.
is not going to be like, you can't do ballet anymore. She would probably buy you the shoe. Sasha overhears this and sees that her shoe is broken, and this sparks something in her. But she's also, Boo's also, we see, is very sad about her mother not believing in her. Truly shows up with curtains and helps put curtains up. Well, she doesn't help. She just straight up puts the curtains and a rod up for Michelle while Michelle just, like, talks about her life. Truly says, like, I always know what other people need, everybody except for myself, which was kind of funny. And she seems to know exactly what Michelle needs, too.
Yeah, I love that line. We should say that before this, there was a scene that Michelle's like, why don't you just fix the floor? So
to Fanny, yeah.
They can have the auditions here. And she's basically like, with what money? Like, she's very sassy back to her. Like, oh, I didn't even think of that. I'll just fix the floor. I'll just go grab the golden egg goose or whatever. But we find out that the approximate cost to fix this is like $2,000, which seems like not crazy.
Right.
For a business owner to come up with.
I happen to see the description of the next episode, the first like couple words.
Uh-huh.
Which leads me to believe there's more to know about Fanny's financial situation.
Interesting. Because you definitely had the question, like, this woman doesn't pay rent. She owns a business that she charges money for. Like, why doesn't she have any money?
Yeah. I mean, part of owning a business is that you use some of that money to grow your business or fix stuff. So it's sort of like, why don't you have enough money to fix these floors? Where's that money going? Either Michelle or Truly says something about how Fanny uses her own money to fix up the property and it's like losing money. I don't know how that makes sense. I don't know what she's fixing on the property.
Well, I think she means like specifically for this event, she invests a lot, like in the food and all that stuff.
Sure.
It wasn't clear, but I think that's what she meant, that she loses money by having these auditions here.
Maybe that's what she meant.
But you suspect, because you read a tiny spoiler, that we're going to dive into Fanny's financials?
Yeah, and I wish there was just a touch more of that, because the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, you don't pay rent. Why don't you have money? It's not like you're on a pension. You're making money at your school.
And it's not like $10,000 or $20,000.
Yeah. It's a reasonable amount of money you could pay. Also, like, maybe you could sell some shit for that money. I thought the solution was going to be selling all that furniture that she got from her landlord.
I thought that was just going to be a solution in general for her to get rid of some of that stuff. Like, have a yard sale as a way to just, like, get a bunch of kooky townspeople in there.
So Michelle's like, you know what? I'm going to fix this. Sasha, by the way, we see a scene where she steals some money from her mother. You know, the right thing to do. And she buys shoes for Boo. And she goes over to Boo like, oh, my dad bought me some shoes. They're not my size. They're too big. Dad's an idiot. I don't want them. You can have them. Boo's all like, your dad buys everything for you. How would he suddenly get your shoes so wrong? And Sasha's all like, whatever, take them or don't, and walks away. So now Boo has shoes to use for the audition.
Truly also sort of rehashes what Fanny already told us in the pilot, that like she was a dancer that kind of had to give everything up to be a teacher once she had a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Truly kind of dives into it slightly more. Like, Fanny was like a very, very good, she was like a prodigy. She was like hitting milestones sooner than most people. And she suddenly had to give that all up. So this is sort of like all she has. And it's very important to her, which is why she puts so much money into it. She wants to like keep her reputation.
Right. There's also a small like sub story where Michelle has a dream where she auditions. And it looks like she's doing well. Like, I feel like we're supposed to think she's doing well.
I think this is maybe the audition she didn't get to do in the pilot, where they just rejected her immediately.
I think it may be. And then she finishes and the guy just looks up and says, no. And she wakes up. And I don't know if the dream inspired her or just the story from Truly, but she decides she's going to fix the floors. She goes to the hardware store where Tom is, but now he's Bob. Tom from Gilmore Girls. I guess he's sort of typecast as one kind of guy, but he plays it pretty well.
Yeah, he's a hardware construction guy.
He's all like, yeah, we could do the floors for X amount of money, and we could even do it tonight, but it's going to, you know, it's like $2,000. She's like, oh, I can't pay that, but what if I... Then she's like, what if we could put it on layaway? This was kind of funny to me, because the guys are like, okay, but it's the same. Like, you still pay us when you get it. On layaway, you get it once you've paid.
Yeah. Did you say there's two guys? It's Bob and Don that work at the
hardware store? Bob and Don, yeah. So then she decides that she's just going to flirt with the guys, which is very Amy, because she did this with Lorelai, too. She starts trying to flirt with the guys. Bob has nothing to do with it. Then she tries to flirt with Don, and, like, it goes even worse because she's, like, trying to flirt with his vest he doesn't have on.
Yeah. Like, oh, you don't have Bob was wearing a vest. She's like, oh,
she's like, Don, is that short for Donald? He's like, no, I don't remember what he said, Donna Nick or something.
Yeah. She's, like, touching him on the titty where his vest would be.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, no vest. What's the story there? He's like, yeah, we're not going to help you. I was wondering if they were maybe gay. Because later she tells Fanny she was flirting with them, and Fanny, like, can't believe it at first. Yeah. So I thought she was going to be like, well, yeah, that wasn't going to work. But I don't think that's the case.
Guys, I'm not going to go into a huge rant about this. Just give me 30 seconds of your time. I don't like this whole, like, I'll flirt with the guys and they'll do the thing I want. And then she's mad that her sex appeal wasn't enough or they weren't horny enough. It's like, this is kind of gross. This whole idea of, like, we can manipulate men with my bodies. It's fun. Like, there's so many problems with, like, between the genders as far as inequality, for sure. It's just like this weird thing where I never liked that in a movie when it's like, why wouldn't they give me this thing I wanted? I was sexy. Like, okay, that's gross to me. And the show doubles down on it too, because then they decide they're going to go to a different town and they'll find a cheaper guy there. So they go to another town called Oxnard.
Lots of Nards jokes.
Where they find some floor guy, which won't do it. I guess they go through many people at Oxnard until they find some dude who will do it. It's pretty funny too. They're driving back at night. It seems like it's just Fanny and Michelle in the car complaining about how gross Oxnard is. And then some dude just in the backseat just pops up. Like, yeah, I don't like it either. Whatever. I forget what he says, but just like pops up. There's like, there's a guy in the car?
It's an older dude that Fanny clearly flirted with to get
here. Yeah. His name is Floyd.
Michelle's like, is he going to murder us? Like, do we know anything about? Because he's just going to like do the work overnight while they go to sleep. And like, he's going to stay on a cot.
But then Fanny says, like, I know how to like flirt with a guy, lead him on, get him to do what you want, and then leave crying. And it was like, what? Like, that's weird. Like, I think she says crying back to their wife. In that case, it's like, okay, well, it's a guy who was going to cheat on his wife, so he's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But still, like, this manipulation through sexuality for something is weird. I don't know. I don't like it. Anyway, that's my thoughts. You think whatever you want.
But I think it's also left unclear if she slept with him or not.
Yeah.
Because they have a weird conversation later where she was like, did you get him off in the morning? Like, did you see that he got off okay or something like that? Like, go home? But like, I don't know. Fanny kind of responds pretty flirtily.
I think it's just for laughs and she's ribbing her and she didn't actually do it. But I don't know, man.
It sounds like Fanny would if she had to.
Yeah. She could probably convince Rico to do it and he just wouldn't remember the next day. He'd get Tom or Don.
Did I just sex you with favors last night?
Did I? So Joffrey decides they're going to hold auditions there. It seems to me like it's very close to the deadline to be switching locations for this, quite honestly.
Yeah, Ojai probably got their Rico to make a bunch of food already.
Yeah, it seems really weird. And that guy's on mushrooms, so like getting him focused. Joffrey holds their auditions at Fanny's studio. And this is the next day too, right? It's like literally the next day?
I think so. I think it is the day after the guy fixed the floors. So like,
when I mean, I guess they could have called earlier and be like, we're fixing them.
True.
But like, what if that guy died or something? Yeah. This guy did not seem trustworthy. They're holding auditions. Fanny and Michelle are having some wine together. Boo goes in very excited for her audition. Comes out like 10 seconds later, like, I got cut. She seems fine with it. This was nice though. Fanny's like, no, you weren't. Put this wig on and put this like other thing on and go back in there. She goes in back in there. Your name is now whatever. Girl comes back. Couple minutes later, like, I got cut. She's like, put this new wig on, go back in there. She does this like three times. Finally, she's like, no, I got cut enough. I tried. I'll try again next year. Fanny explains to Michelle that the reason she keeps doing this is because Boo is not being seen. She's going in there with all these women who have these ballet bodies where they're very thin. And she just looks so different than everyone else that she's like an easy cut. They just cut her. Fanny says, though, at some point she'll go in there and there'll be a woman with, like, bigger hips than her and she won't stand out as much and she won't be the one that's instantly cut. It's interesting because it seems like pretty harsh, but like, I mean, if we're talking about ballet, that's just like the truth of what it is. You know what I mean? Like they were looking for a certain body type.
Yeah, it's very
And I think Fan is being realistic about it. But in the same token of being very realistic, she's doing everything she can to get her student to at least get like a legitimate shot.
Yeah.
And I think some of this speaks to Michelle, who is like, oh, maybe if I just kept auditioning, I would have gotten this thing. But it wasn't just that it wasn't seen.
Yeah. And I think Boo does say that like one of the times they like told her she had good form or something, like they did actually pay attention.
Yeah.
But they cut her for like legit reasons otherwise, besides just looking at her and saying no.
Boo also talks to Sasha afterwards.
Who clearly got in.
Yeah, she says to Sasha, how'd it go? And Sasha was like, all right, I guess. Which is like, did it go well? But yeah, I think she did get in. Boo says, you want to come with me and have some failure cake? And Sasha's like, yeah, I do, which is nice. She's like, but I have to fill out some paperwork first, which indicates she got in or got on a waiting list at the very least. Because I doubt Boo's doing paperwork.
Yeah.
That night, Michelle has a dream again. It's the same one where she's auditioning. It's the same director there. But instead of saying no, he just holds up a cake that says, better luck next year. And she wakes up.
I wonder if the implication is like, the episode's over now. It ends with her sort of like walking around with the la-las playing, thinking about this.
Yeah.
But I wondered, like, is there some kind of implication? Like, she's not getting these roles because she's too old. Will she get seen when she, like, stands next to Fanny? Because Fanny is maybe too old? You know, like, the same as Boo will get seen when she stands next to someone that's bigger than her.
Yeah.
Maybe Michelle will get seen when she stands next to someone older than her. I don't know what that means, like, for Fanny. But I feel like that's what we're setting up here. Because she auditioned twice and then...
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it's just... a lesson to keep on trying as well.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I feel like there's something there like that, that she just hasn't been seen and maybe she will be seen. And maybe it would be just she'll stand next to someone that's older. That just seems so shallow to me. Not shallow writing, just like shallow. Even though I just said this is the way it is. It's the real life, you know, way that they do this.
Maybe not like literally she's going to have an audition where there's an older person and she gets it, but like... maybe she's going to take over this ballet studio from Fanny and Fanny's going to give it to her because she learns to love her. I bet that this is where this would go, at least. I have heard that we're not going to get 100% satisfying ending, though. Like, the show does end on a bit of a cliffy.
Unlike Carnosaur, which ended perfectly. You guys should really watch the whole trilogy.
So, Brian, did you like this episode?
Yeah, I liked it. It wasn't amazing. And it's the show for me has so many like logical things that I'm like, what's the point of this? Why is this happening? In Gilmore Girls, it was in this town where everything's crazy. So anything that happens in the town with those like crazy characters is sort of like, it's almost like an unreal magical town. But it would play stuff with the main characters pretty serious. Like they wouldn't, like maybe Lorelai's a little silly, but like it all made sense. Like they all acted like real people. In this show, sometimes I have struggled with some of the plot logic. But it was funny. I laughed a few times at this one. Rico was hilarious. His wife was very funny.
Yeah. It does feel like it's getting its footing still. Like,
yeah.
The ballet thing feels almost unrelated to the stuff that's going on with Michelle and Fanny. So I'm waiting for that to tie in a little more.
But also the Sasha Boo stuff just seems a little melodramatic. I don't know. Like inconsequential, really, to me. I don't know.
Yeah. I think we're going to start merging everything a bit more now.
Yeah. Well, like, I hope so.
Now that this Joffrey thing is happening, like, what does that mean?
I don't know. Maybe Sasha will be gone for a couple weeks. And then she'll come back and she won't be friends with Boo anymore because she met some other really cool dancers.
I don't know. They really set up Boo.
Was this a good episode? Yeah, it was all right. It's pretty good. We had some similarities, I think.
Oh,
gifting
yeah.
Gifting clothing. Malcolm gifted clothing to Kaylee. And Sasha gifted some clothing to Boo.
There's the idea of using your sexuality.
Using your sexuality to get something. Fancy dancing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Inara always uses her sexuality to get money.
There was a focus on fancy foods.
The strawberries and the Rico's catering.
Yeah.
Catered food, yeah.
Pretending to be somebody else. Summer pretends to be someone from the same place that Badger is from. And Boo pretends to be three or four different ballet students.
Yep. So yeah, you connected things, Amy. Weirdly, there happened to be a connection between a show we're watching and a movie we watched. A huge one. But
crazy, guys.
Neither of those are this. both feature an older dude running down the entire length of a huge conference table and through a glass window or mirror. But none of that has anything to do with this. Brian, which episode do you think was better?
I don't know. Maybe I'll go Bunheads this time.
That's how I feel.
Bunheads made me laugh a few times, and Firefly didn't make me laugh too much.
Yeah, and I think we just got like a little bit more character development in Bunheads this week.
Yeah.
Than we did in Firefly. I don't know that we got too much growth or change in Firefly.
I mean, the kind of growth or change we got, it kind of felt like, but next week you'll be doing it again.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, this Bunheads wasn't like amazing either. I think I've liked some of the other ones more. But I liked a lot of what there was. So I don't know. It's hard to say that Firefly would beat this Bunheads. So right. I think Bunheads was a little bit better.
Cool. Bunheads won one.
You won something, Bunheads. Good job. If you want to watch along next week, we will be discussing Bunheads Episode 5, Money for Nothing. Okay.
As well as Firefly Episode 5, Safe. Connection, safe's where you put money.
Yep. In the meantime, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the episodes discussed in this podcast.
What did you think about the dresses and outfits in Firefly? Did you like the one that Kaylee wore? Did you like the ones that the women had their slaves make for them?
Do you know how to hang attention, Rod?
If you were in Michelle's position, like, what would you say to Fanny when she was like telling you to move furniture? Would you just be like, no, you live on the street now? What would you do?
What would you do to create a diversion?
What do you think the purpose of that chandelier was?
We didn't even talk about that.
I know.
There was like a floating chandelier at the fancy ball in Firefly.
And Malcolm's like, I wonder what the purpose of that is. It's like to be fancy. Let us know. You can reach out by following us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok at Gilmore Slayer. We post interactive questions, comedy sketches, and more.
Or send us an email at brianandstacyreviews@gmail.com. That's Brian with a Y and Stacy with an EY.
For more bonus content, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/Brian and Stacy, where you can watch our video recaps of Angel and now Veronica Mars. We also post monthly podcast outtakes, share early extended episode previews, and host monthly live stream watch parties where you can chat with us live. And a lot of you guys are very funny and insightful.
Yeah, and shout out to our new Patreon subscribers, Yana, Lindsay Judge, and Essie.
Thank you.
For more of our content, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, also called Brian and Stacy.
If you want to support our content, you can do so by making a donation of your choosing via the link found at the bottom of our episode descriptions or in our social media bios.
And if you like what you're hearing, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll give you a shout-out on an upcoming podcast.
Don't you be playing with that car. It's also a dinosaur.
But Grandpa, we have to save the racetrack.
It'll eat the other cars. It's a carnosaur.
How do you know that, Grandpa?
But it doesn't eat every car, only special ones, because it's a bit of a connoisseur, a connoisseuring.
It sounds...
But you asked a question I ignored.
Yeah, I asked, how do you know it's a carnosaur, Grandpa?
Because it told me. It doesn't speak. That was made clear. It wrote it down.
It wrote it down?
Yeah, in cursive.
Grandpa, I gotta go.
Where are you going?
Away from you. Sorry.
Okay, but what I said is true.
It's okay. I'll figure it out by myself.
Be careful.
Bye.
Bye.